Oh my gosh, it's time for the show. Where is everybody?
Just you wait and see the worlds of music from the Silly Symphony.
Presenting the Great Movie Ride.
This, as you may recognize, is a maintenance service elevator, still in operation, waiting for you.
Ready when you are, Raul.
Your information station.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to the WDW Radio Show, your Walt Disney World information station. I am your host, Lou Mangiello, and this is show number 440, and I'm here once again to help you have the best possible Disney vacation experience and bring you a little bit of Disney magic wherever you are with this podcast, videos, blog, live video broadcasts on Facebook, special events, books, audio tours, and more. You can find everything over at wwradio.com and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. I just returned from speaking at a conference in the Philippines last week, and on my way there and back, I was fortunate enough to have a long layover in Hong Kong. And you're probably saying, why is having a long layover a good thing? Because when in Hong Kong, you go to Hong Kong Disneyland. And this week, I want to share not just my experiences in the park, but take you through every land, attraction, entertainment, and, of course, dining experience, and compare and contrast Hong Kong Disneyland to Walt Disney World and Disneyland in Anaheim. We'll also share tips on when to go, how to get there, and how to get the most out of your time in the parks. I'll then have the answer to our last Walt Disney World trivia question of the week and pose a new challenge for your chance to win a Disney, Hong Kong Disneyland, prize package. And then stay tuned to the end of the show, as I'll have more information about upcoming WDW Radio events in Walt Disney World and on the road. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of the WDW Radio Show. Last week, I was invited to speak at a conference in the Philippines, and after about 20 or so hours flying from Orlando to Los Angeles, laying over, and then Los Angeles to Hong Kong, I finally arrived in Hong Kong, and the first thing that I saw in the airport was the Hong Kong Disneyland store, and for some reason, I was giddy as a schoolboy when I saw it and what I saw inside there. And I had remembered talking with a friend who visits China quite often, and his instructions and really reassurances about how and why I should go to see very nearby Hong Kong Disneyland during a very long layover on the way back. I did. I took his advice, and it was an experience I won't soon forget, and it is one that I want to share with you. So joining me this week is that certain friend who gave me the confidence, guidance, and direction to visit. And coming back to the show once again is my friend Frank Hart. Ni hao.
Yeah, ni hao to you, Lou.
Which I hope means hello, because I was saying it to everybody in China.
It does. It does. And thanks for having me on.
And I think I only knew about Ni Hao from some Disney Channel show like Ni Hao Kai Lan. So that's that was the Ni Hao and Shay Shay is the extent of my Chinese.
Well, if you know those two, you can get by. So that's really what you need.
I did. I made it there. I made it to Disneyland, and I made it back. But you you go to China a lot for work. And when I said that I was going, the first thing you said was, "Hey, if you have a layover in Hong Kong, you need to go and visit Hong Kong Disneyland." And admittedly, I was very nervous. I was traveling alone. I was concerned, even though I had like a 9-hour delay, about leaving the airport, getting to Disneyland, getting back, getting through customs. What do I do with my bag? You know, but you and another friend of mine, Jeff, who his family is from China, was like, "Yeah, man, you can do it. You know, Hong Kong Disneyland is about a 20-minute ride to the airport." But he warned, he's like, "Take the blue cab. Don't take the red cab. Don't take the green cab. You need to take..." I was like, "Don't cut the red wire. Cut the blue wire."
That's right. Don't take the red pill. Take the blue pill, right? I'm glad you were able to make it, and that we gave you the confidence to do it. Because, yes, it is a quick trip away from the airport. It's easy to get to. It's actually easy to get to from anywhere in Hong Kong because they have the MTR, which is the metro line, subway system. That goes directly there. There's cabs. There's taxis. So access to Hong Kong Disneyland is easy. And like you said, from the airport, it's only about 20 minutes.
Yeah, and everybody at the airport was very, very helpful, too. I had a carry-on bag, and there's a place that you can go, it's called Left Baggage, where you check in your bag with your passport. They take it, and they charge you, very little to hold the bag throughout the day. And there was actually a screen that it sort of was a little matrix that said, if you're going to Hong Kong Disneyland, you can take the red, the green, or the blue. I knew to take the blue. And as we were saying before, it's a very organized system outside. There's a section to load for red, the green, and the blue, the Lantau cabs, which I think you said stay on this island that really houses Hong Kong Disneyland and the airport.
Yeah, so there's the different cabs, and they can explain it when you're there. But basically, red and green going into the city. The red goes into more Hong Kong Island, and the green will go out to the New Territories, which is a little bit farther out, outskirts of Hong Kong. And like we said, the Lantau Island is the blue, and that's where the airport is. It's where Hong Kong Disneyland is. It's where I think it's the Pulong Monastery. I think that's the name of it, is also there. And that cab will kind of take you. It's a big touristy area. So if you're in Hong Kong airport, make sure you take blue if you want to stay there. It's just easier. I think it has something to do with how the taxis get paid as far as their rate. Regarding the blue does not leave the island, so they have a different kind of rate. So, it's easy to do this. It's very well marked in the airport. It's very easy. There's English signs everywhere. A plus side to Hong Kong with it being under Britain rule for so long is, there's a lot of English and a lot of English speaking people there. So usually it's pretty easy to get around.
Yeah, and everybody, for the most part, especially in the airport, spoke English. There was no real language barrier, so my questions were very easily answered by the Hong Kong information desk where I was leaving my bags. And then when I asked about the cabs, they said, yes, you're going to need Hong Kong dollars. There are exchange kiosks and currency exchange booths throughout, and I was able to use my American credit card in order to get Hong Kong dollar, although I still don't know exactly what the exchange rate was. That the cab ride was about $15, which is like 8 million Hong Kong dollars. I don't know. It was like maybe 150, I think she said, or so Hong Kong dollars to get there.
Yeah, the exchange rate right now, give or take, and it fluctuates, obviously, but it's anywhere in the sevens usually. Right now, I think it's about 7.75, 7.75. So you just keep that in mind. It's easy to be afraid of certain things when you see the price. You're like, 5,000 Hong Kong dollars. That's like, but when you put it in perspective, it does put it, you can figure out what it is. But yeah, there's currency exchange places. And obviously, I've used just my debit card and some of the ATMs to get Hong Kong dollars out as well. And within the main terminal, there's also ATMs where you can pull out currency with your debit card for other countries, depending where you're traveling.
Yeah, it was really helpful because I didn't want to get into the cab and then him not tell me that he doesn't take American Express, and then I run into some kind of a problem. But yeah, it was a really wonderful experience. And then when I saw the sign as we were traveling down the road on the wrong side of the street, as I saw the sign that said Disneyland, because again, a lot of the signs are in English as well, I immediately felt confident. And I will tell you, man, I was giddy. Like, I felt like a little kid going to Disneyland for the first time. Like, I had this big, as you go under sort of this giant welcome to Hong Kong Disneyland archway, and you can immediately tell as soon as you get on Disneyland, Hong Kong Disneyland property, because of the landscaping and the grounds. It was a really neat experience, one that I obviously haven't had since I visited Disneyland for the first time as a relative adult back in like 2005. And it was neat to feel that way again, visiting a new Disneyland park for the first time.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the same feeling. My first trip, I took the MTR, which is their subway line in Hong Kong. And they have a separate line that goes there. And the actual subway cars have Mickey Mouse shaped windows, and all the handles are little Mickey heads. And so it's very cool. It's already kind of themed to Disney, and you definitely feel like you're already getting that Disney magic as soon as you get on that rail. And then it drops you off at this beautiful, you know, train station that is just so elaborate and has that Disney touch. And you walk up, and I believe the taxis probably drop you around the same area, but you know, you walk down a long courtyard towards like a giant fountain as you walk towards Hong Kong Disneyland. And this fountain is huge. It's got Monstro the Whale, and it's got Mickey shooting out the top of his blowhole. And you're just instantly knowing that you're being immersed into this new Disneyland, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, man, it was interesting. And I did get dropped off around that same area, and I saw the train station, which it was beautiful and almost had this sort of modern Victorian look to it. And you do sort of walk down that long walkway under the Welcome to Hong Kong Disneyland sign. And I did notice, and it was even more beautiful at night, that the fountain that you have to walk through, and then you obviously go over to the gate. And the other thing I had noticed too, which again, coming from Florida, was relatively foreign to me, is just how the park is surrounded by mountains. And even though it was overcast and a little, you know, gray that day, which as you say is sometimes common, you know, the berm in Hong Kong Disneyland is much bigger than the berm in California.
Yeah, once you're actually in the park, you feel like you are in some mystical place that's in the middle of mountains, because you look down down Main Street and you see the castle, and behind it is a giant mountain. You know, and they're full, you know, and the mountains there are obviously green and grassy and full of trees. You know, they're not like a big rocky mountain, but it makes a beautiful backdrop to that park.
Yeah, because you think Hong Kong, or my maybe original thought of Hong Kong when I was that it was going to be surrounded by giant skyscrapers and in a very sort of you know, busy part of Hong Kong, but it is sort of, it's almost isolated. You know, it's on this area on Lantau Island called Penny's Bay, on about 123 or so acres, which we'll talk about the size in a little bit, but it very much felt isolated from the massive towering skyscrapers and apartment buildings and office buildings you pass on the highway on the way there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's part of the beauty of it is, you know, they accomplished that in such a, you know, like you said, a very metropolitan area. In Hong Kong, there's buildings there that, you know, they call it a small little apartment complex. And I'm from St. Louis, and it makes St. Louis look tiny, you know, and these are just apartment buildings for, you know, a small portion of their city, you know, and, to be able to isolate that busyness and that bit of the city in it's just amazing how they did that.
Yeah. And like I said, man, as I was walking up to, the guest relations window to get my ticket, that's really when I started to get that, that excitement. You know, you can start to hear the music and things like that. And, you know, I bought a 1-day ticket, which was, it's about, regular admission is about only $70 for the day, again, compared to what you pay domestically. And what I didn't realize is that, and that this promotion's going to expire at the end of March, but I assume it's one that comes back occasionally, is that I took Cathay Pacific, which if you're flying to Asia, and again, Frank, this was your advice, Cathay Pacific is an amazing airline. I mean, far and away the best flight experience I've ever had, and the food was amazing and the service was exceptional. But they had a promotion that called the In Transit Easy Pass ticket, where if you brought your boarding pass, you would get a ticket for half price, and they would store your luggage for you.
Yeah, and that's a great perk right there. And you were telling me about that. I wasn't even aware of that ticket package that they had. So that it goes to show, you know, make sure you ask, because there are those kinds of partnerships with some of the airlines with Hong Kong Disneyland to get guests to go there because it is so close to the airport. And like you were saying, definitely if my recommendation, if anyone's thinking about going over, Cathay Pacific is one of the best airlines, and it is a one world partner with American Airlines. So if you have status with American Airlines, you're going to get the same mileage and perks. But yeah, the ticket prices, like you said, are about $540 Hong Kong dollars, which is about $70 U.S. You can get a two-day ticket for about $95 U.S., which is also a steal for. And really, you could do the park in a day, but you probably could spend two and really get into the details because there are a lot of interesting things to see there. And what I always find, and I wish we had these prices still at home, is their annual pass prices, which they call the Magic Access price. With Hong Kong Disneyland really being a locals park, you can get a entry-level annual pass, which gets you into about, they say, about 200 days a year. It's $139 U.S. Wow. is the equivalent. So, I wish we still had that option here. And even their gold or their platinum pass is only $385. And that includes 20% off hotels and dining, 10% off merchandise, and free parking, and a bunch of other perks. So definitely some opportunity there. Even if you thought, like me, I go to China a couple times a year. If I had time to do it, I'd probably just get an annual pass.
Yeah, that would be awesome if you had annual passes to Hong Kong Disneyland. And the thing that I noticed too, and as we start to talk about the size and whatnot, is, well, first questions first, is there a, because you've been to China a number of times, is there a better time of year, either weather-wise or crowd-wise? Because I will tell you, man, I went on a day that was slightly overcast, probably about 70 degrees, which was perfect. You didn't have that blazing sun in your eyes. It was great for photos. It was even misting just a little bit, which kind of kept it cool, but not overly humid. And the crowds were incredible. I mean, we'll talk about the attraction. Everything was pretty much a walk-on or a five-minute wait.
Yeah, as far as weather-wise, Hong Kong is typically hot. It's Florida hot, with the humidity, and it's warm, and you're going to sweat. That's usually how Hong Kong and Southeast China is there, Southeast Asia. But this time of year was particularly cool. I haven't seen it this cool in a while, especially in the Hong Kong area. Usually this time of year, early March, February, it is cooler. And it's so if you were going to go, this is kind of the time. It's almost equatable to Florida, where, this time of year is nicer in Florida. And if you think about it that way, you can kind of plan your schedule weather-wise.
Yeah, I got very lucky. And having come, look, I come from Florida, where I understand that it's hot. And I've been to Animal Kingdom in the summer, so I understand really hot. But I also went to the Philippines, where it's like stupid hot. Like, people in Animal Kingdom are going, man, it's really hot. Like, it's exceptionally hot. Like, you are on the equator, which is like four steps away from being on the sun itself. So I was really happy that I got a nice cool day to walk around the park.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, definitely. This time of year is an ideal time to go. And as far as crowds, it does tend to be more of a weekend park where a lot more of the locals will be there on the weekend. So if you're able to plan your trip and go during the week, you will find those lower crowds. I've been to Hong Kong Disneyland several times, and I've been on a Saturday, and it was busy. And I've been during the week, and it's been slow. And like you said, most of the time when you go during the week, you are able to kind of walk on.
Yeah, it was, it worked out well because I did only have a very limited amount of time, relatively speaking. I was able to see the whole park, but to your point, I wish I almost could have spent 2 days there. Because in terms of relative size, it is the second smallest of all the parks. The park itself is only about 68 acres, and Disney Studios Paris is 62. To give you a sense of scale, California Adventure is about 72, Disneyland's about 85, our Magic Kingdom here at Walt Disney World is 105, so it gives you a sense of the size, although I will tell you, as I was exploring more, when you first walk in, you get a sense that it's small, but then when you start to go over to places like Grizzly Gulch and Mystic Point and Toy Story Land, it started to feel a little bit more expansive than it did when I first walked in.
Yeah, it's definitely tight. Everything is much more compact. I mean, even like Fantasyland feels very small. There's only, three major attractions there, I think. Small World, the Teacups, Winnie the Pooh, and PhilharMagic, so four. So if you compare that to, Disney World, which has so many more, attractions in just that area alone. But yeah, it's but you're right. Once you get out into Grizzly Gulch, it does feel much more expansive, and they've added a lot to the park. So even since when it first opened, you know, Grizzly Gulch is new. The Toy Story area is brand new. Mystic Manor is brand new. So if you can imagine, even when I first went at the 5-year anniversary, and now they're celebrating 10, you know, some of that stuff wasn't even there. So it felt much tighter and smaller even back then.
Yeah, so Grizzly, Mystic Point, and Toy Story Land all came in 2014, so they're relatively new, and they certainly feel that way, you know, when you get into, although the park itself still feels new. But yeah, in terms of numbers of attractions, again, comparatively speaking, Hong Kong Disneyland currently has about 29. To put it in perspective, Hollywood Studio, well, I won't say Hollywood Studios because that's changing a lot, but Animal Kingdom has about 20, Epcot has about 24, California Adventure has 36, Disneyland has 49. So it gives you a sense of just how much there is to do there. But, you know, I almost put a little bit of a caveat there, because when we think of attractions, I don't necessarily just think of something that you get on and ride in, because there was a lot of little areas that I liked where you can sort of, you know, wander and explore, like little gardens. Like there's the Fairy Tale Forest and Fantasy Gardens, and in Adventureland they had I don't remember what land it was. They had sort of that little Garden of Wonders. So there was like three or four little areas that I think you consider attractions, but aren't necessarily get in line and ride on.
Yeah, those little gardens are nice, and yeah, you're right. The Gardens of Wonders by Mystic Point, and they have other things that maybe we wouldn't necessarily call an attraction when we compare it to Disney World, because they consider even like the Sword in the Stone an attraction at Hong Kong Disneyland, and the little tikis that shoot water at you are an attraction. But you know, again, for what this park is, and I have several friends who live in Hong Kong. You know, this is where they go out to play, because if you know Hong Kong, I mean, it's city street after city street. There's some small park areas, but it's not like, New York, where you can go to Central Park and spend a day and there's wide spaces. You know, to actually get out somewhere where you have a place to play and wander, that's hard to find in that area. So a lot of locals will come here and enjoy those gardens and have little picnics and, you know, just explore some of those areas that maybe we sometimes take for granted that in like Disney World.
Yeah, and I love that. And obviously, you know, the first thing that you notice when you walk in, even as I walked and was getting my ticket before you enter the park, is just how much it felt like Disneyland in terms of the train station and the scale, even before I entered the park, and certainly once you get onto Main Street USA. But obviously, there's a heavy Asian influence there, and there was a lot of deliberate choices in terms of design to integrate Asian and Chinese culture into the design and the feel of the park. I mean, obviously, you know, like you said, it's primarily a locals park. I was one of very few what appeared to be Americans that were walking around in there. So it very much is a like a locals park as opposed to maybe a tourist destination. So I can understand why it was important to, as Disney always does, to integrate the culture of where the parks are.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously Main Street is Main Street. When you enter the park, it definitely feels like Main Street USA, like you would expect to see with, you know, some touches of the culture of Hong Kong. But really, I think one of the areas that, and I'm sure we'll discuss this, and I can't believe it's taken us this long to get here, but, is the food. And the food is one of the major differences in this park compared to all the others is, you know, it's much harder to find more Western food here than it is, Hong Kong or Chinese food.
Oh, we'll get to the food. Don't you worry. Because that, I will tell you, that was one of the things I was most excited to see. I love Asian food. We were saying before about the flight, you know, on the Cathay Pacific, usually for the breakfast and the dinner services, because remember, it's a 14-plus-hour flight from L.A., they usually had like an American style meal and they had an Asian style meal. So I loved having, you know, noodles and dim sum for breakfast. So I was very, very excited to see just how different, and oh baby, it's very different once you get into the park.
Yeah, the food is definitely different, but it's if you're adventurous, and I don't want to say adventurous, but if you're willing to be open-minded and try some of the new styles, you can find some foods that are, you know, extremely good. And again, this is Disney quality food, you know, so you know that the food is going to be good. It's going to be fresh. And, you know, for me, a lot of times when I go to the park, I'm going at the end of one of my two-week China trips. So when I go into Tomorrowland and they have the place with the burgers, I'm like, oh, I'm getting a burger, you know, but right. That's because I've been eating Chinese food for, you know, 2 weeks already. But there are the opportunities to have some Western cuisine there too. So, you know, you don't have to be afraid of, oh, you know, well, I don't, some of the food scares me, or I don't like seafood, or, you know, because being in Hong Kong and that part of China, it is very seafood based, a lot of their diet. But there are Western meals there as well.
Yeah, there was nothing that I didn't feel, you know, safe or comfortable. And I tried to think about people who did have either dietary restrictions or maybe were not as adventurous. But listen, before we get to the food, I want to get to the attractions, because I want to spend sure. An inordinate amount of time certainly on the food. But I will tell you, it was really neat to see how, and I was concerned about this, just how much is in English. Even as you just about to step under the train station, and again, the layout is exactly the same, and there's the flower Mickey out front, excuse me, but the Hear You Leave Today and Enter the World of Yesterday, Tomorrow, and Fantasy is both in English and in Chinese, as pretty much 99.9% of the signage was throughout the park.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the, I was flipping through my photos, you know, before we had our cook talk today, and yeah, it's actually like the fourth picture I have is that sign. You know, it's the fact that there's that classic sign, and it has English and Chinese translation. And yeah, and most of the park is in English, you know, especially in Mandarin and in Cantonese sometimes. So they'll have three versions in certain areas, especially in like menus. It's very easy to get around. You'll feel like you're at home when you go in that park. You don't feel afraid. Everything's very familiar. And it's interesting. I know we're talking about the attractions. So like the Jungle Cruise actually has two versions. There's an English version and there's a Mandarin version. And you can ride it different ways. And I've ridden both and they're both interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I'll get to the Jungle Cruise quickly because I really enjoyed it. But even when you step on Main Street, all of the buildings, you know, it says Main Street Cinema, it says Now Playing, it, you know, everything, all the signage on Main Street USA, which feels very much like Disneyland's Main Street USA, is all in English. So had the color palette not been different, had you not seen the mountains in the background, and had the street actually felt much wider, but you would almost... make a direct comparison between the Hong Kong Main Street USA and the Disneyland from the buildings, the facade. Again, their arcade Disneyland's arcade is sort of the carriage house here, but they have, you know, that same type of lattice work. They had the sweet shop. They have the cinema. So even the cigar store Indian. So it felt very much like a slightly modified version of Disneyland.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like you said, it's very familiar, but still there's, you know, it's a little different. The streets feel wider. The buildings feel a little squattier, maybe a little shorter. And I don't know if that's because of the perspective of trying to make the mountains in the background feel bigger, or, you know, obviously there's a reason why they did it. But, you know, and even the street is all brick, which is, you know, very interesting and you know, something kind of unique, which gives it like more of like a... you know, like a historic downtown feel with that brick road going all the way up to the castle.
And the one thing I have to say that I noted when I walked in, and I noted it as I walked to the park and as I walked out, and bears mentioning, is this park is spotless.
Yes.
I mean, every inch of this park is complete. It looks like the park just opened that morning. Like,
yes,
it's amazing.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I've looked when I've gone, you know, and I've been like, oh, there's got to be something, a scratch on the trash can or something. There's nothing. This park is always spotless every time I've gone. And, you know, just like at Disney World, you know, they have the cast members walking around, always cleaning. But it is amazing how clean they keep this park.
I mean, and I don't know if it's... if it's a cultural thing that they're very, maybe very, very extra respectful of the park, or the cast members, but I mean, not even like a pile of leaves in the corner. I was just sort of looking around for something. Like, I'm like, there's got to be, you know, there's got to be a chink in the armor somewhere, and I did not see it anywhere at all. I mean, even the the landscaping and the horticulture and the flowers are just spectacular. You know, as you walk over towards the Sleeping Beauty Castle, which looks very much like Disneyland, they don't have a partner statue, but they do have a Mickey and a Mitty and all these sort of little three-dimensional floral vignettes, which are just beautiful.
Yeah, and like I said, I haven't been there in about 2 years, so the last time I was there, they had a giant Sorcerer Mickey statue in the middle, and I don't know if is that still there? Or
no, this time they had a farmer Mickey.
Oh, okay. So I had heard that it rotates from my friend who lives in Hong Kong, who goes quite often. She said that it usually changes. So, and I think that's kind of a neat twist, you know, something different. Obviously, we always want to see the partner statue because of what it means. But it is interesting that, you know, they want to keep some freshness in the park and some things rotating.
Yeah, they had a mini under sort of a floral heart. They had a Pluto in his doghouse. So the layout of their hub is slightly different than what you see in the other parks. But again, and I have photos which I'll post in the show notes. So if you go to www.radio.com, click on this week's podcast, you'll find my photo gallery there. Because that's really what I was doing. I was being such a tourist, like running through as fast as I possibly could while trying to save it all and take as many pictures as possible. But sort of going sort of land by land, again, there's seven lands here. There is Adventureland, Fantasyland, Toy Story Land, Mystic Point, Grizzly Gulch, Main Street USA, and Tomorrowland. So they cram a lot into a relatively small space. I had my map with me, although I had no sort of destination in mind. I just felt that since it was my first time there, I needed to walk through Sleeping Beauty Castle and go into Fantasyland. Again, man, it was that familiar but different in terms of a lot of things reminded me of stepping into Fantasyland from Disneyland Sleeping Beauty Castle, but not all the same attractions were there. So their attractions in Fantasyland include Cinderella Carousel, Dumbo the Flying Elephant, the Fairy Tale Forest, which is a walkthrough, a Fantasy Gardens walkthrough outdoor attraction. They have a Disneyland Railroad Station, Small World, the Mad Hatter Teacups, Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, Mickey's Philhar Magic, Sleeping Beauty Castle, the Snow White Grotto, and like you said, they consider the Sword and the Stone an attraction, sort of an outdoor type character experience. But so how do you compare their Fantasyland versus either World's Fantasyland or Disneyland's?
I would call it intimate because it's, you know, it's tiny. It's small, but you still have a lot of that, you know, some of that same character where, you know, Philhar Magic is still kind of the exterior looks, you know, sort of that German, European look, you know, kind of like Pinocchio's Village House has in Disney World. And the carousel is still very familiar. It's very similar to the carousel of ours. I didn't ride the teacups, but again, you know, that very similar in style. And yeah, it's just it's quaint.
Yeah,
that's the best way to put it. Yeah,
it is. And I also, because I had limited time, I bypassed things like the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. I didn't ride Dumbo. I didn't ride the carousel or see Philhar Magic, which again, like I saw in Tomorrowland, there are shows in that are in English, and there are shows that are in Chinese. I unfortunately missed the English version of a show in Tomorrowland because I only had specific times. But I will tell you, one of the things that I loved about their Fantasyland was, believe it or not, man, I loved the walkthrough Fairy Tale Forest, this little garden that had, it's almost like the Storybook Land canal boats, but as a walkthrough type attraction. A lot of little photo opportunities, little vignettes of scenes and some stuff that are actually animated and that had music. And it was really nice. I like those types of very simple experiences. And you know, now as I think about it, it's ironic because the very first thing I ever rode when I went to Disneyland was the Storybook Land canal boats. And the very first thing that I did at Hong Kong Disneyland was the Fairy Tale Forest.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a cool coincidence. Yeah, it's, you know, I rode Winnie the Pooh. It's basically the same as it is in the other parks, not too different there. You know, but Winnie the Pooh is a big character overseas. So that's why that ride got some precedence, you know, because they don't have Peter Pan, which you would think, you know, they would have, you know, Peter Pan's flight. That's like a standard, right? But they don't have it. But, you know, The ride I was thinking of is PhilharMagic, and you mentioned it earlier, is it's on a rotation. So, you know, the first show is in English, the second show is in Mandarin, and if you get a chance and you have time while you're there, try seeing them both, especially if you're familiar with it, because it's funny when you can't understand the language, but you can still see the reactions, right, and you kind of know what's going on. So that's a fun experience, too, that maybe you wouldn't get somewhere else, you know?
I did ride it, and man, I really, really liked their version of It's a Small World.
Yes.
Again, so familiar, but it's a little bit different. Like Disneyland, they do have the Disney characters scattered throughout the different scenes. But one thing that's maybe unique to here, or maybe they do it in some of the other Asian parks, is as you enter the different rooms, I felt that some of the rooms were much grander in scale, especially vertically, but they also have placards saying this is the Far East room, this is the Americas room, this is the Asian room. Not that you couldn't tell as you went through, but I thought it was interesting that they had those signs there. But I really liked their version of It's a Small World.
Yeah, their version is great, and it's very much like Disneyland, where, you know, you ride more in that trough. It's not the all open water like Disney World is, and also the exterior of their Small World is amazing. It's very reminiscent of Disneyland, but it almost has even more of a grand scale, because you get a little bit of a sneak peek of it as you walk towards it, and you have to kind of walk under the train tracks to actually get to Small World. So you get a nice big reveal when you come out from underneath. So it's almost like Small World's a land of its own within Fantasyland.
Yeah, I don't know how to, and maybe if you see the pictures that I post, you'll get a sense of what I'm saying, but the rooms just felt more expansive. They felt wider. They felt deeper. So that when you got the reveal of the next room, it was really interesting to see just what was coming up ahead. And I felt that there was a lot to see in there. I don't know how it compares in scale, but you're right. The exterior is beautiful. And it reminded me sort of geographically, as you go in Disneyland, as you would go into Mickey's Toontown, as you walk under the train, that's sort of where their It's a Small World is.
Yeah, that's a great comparison. It's almost exactly where it is, and almost the same idea, where you get an idea that Toontown's back there, but then once you finally get underneath the train tracks and get out on the other side, you get the big reveal of what it is. And even the queue for the inside is beautiful, with lights and lattice work, and it's similar to the outside of Disneyland, but you don't load on the outside, you load on the inside.
Yeah, and like you said, it was neat to see the huge mountains behind it as well.
Yes. Yeah. And it just, they did such a good job of playing the mountains into the scenery, where they don't feel obstructive, but they feel like part of Disneyland.
It almost felt fake to me. And what I mean by that is it the same way as when you walk into Radiator Springs and you step onto Route 66 in California Adventure and you see the Cadillac Ridge behind you, it's a facade. You almost felt like this was this very different, very forced perspective facade way off in the distance.
Yeah, it definitely does. And it's amazing how well they put this park into that area.
And something else we can talk about too, that is neat about this park, and I saw it a lot. This was one of the first times I saw a character as I was walking, about to go under the train tracks. Out front was Merlin, a very tall, very skinny Merlin, just sort of wandering around, greeting guests and chatting with guests, taking a lot of photos out in front. But, we can talk about this too, that there are characters seemingly everywhere throughout this park.
Yeah, they get. There's a lot of walk around characters in this park, and culturally different. Stitch is a huge character over there. I saw Stitch all the time when I'm in the parks. Whereas with us, maybe a lot of people would wish Stitch would go away, it's amazing how many characters are out there, and the princesses are out, and they're easily accessible. And the princesses are all Western, girls who are brought in to play these characters for them in those parks. And it's all very authentic. You would feel like you're seeing the same princess there that you would see in Disneyland. And they're so true to what the character should be. And like you said, but the characters are very free roaming, like they are at Disneyland, as opposed to like Disney World, where you almost have to wait, you know, in line to see every character. You could just turn the corner and there could be Pinocchio, and he's just, you know, hanging out and waiting for you to come up and say hi.
Yeah, and the there were always people, you know, people online for characters, but there were never excessively long lines for them. And people were, it seemed to be just naturally very respectful of other people's time. It wasn't like, hey, only 17 more pictures, and can I get one with this kid, but not with this kid? And so the line seemed to move very, very quickly.
Yeah, I think they do a good job over there with taking care of the characters and making sure that it it doesn't become that line feel.
So when I first stepped into Fantasyland, I did it just because that's sort of how I naturally felt to go. And also when I looked to my left, I didn't see the Crystal Palace and an entrance into Adventureland. So I went straight. But I knew the first thing that I wanted to go to see and do was something that was very unique to the park and something that everybody, you included, had said I needed to do, which was go to Mystic Manor. So I had to sort of find my way there. Look, I was typical tourist, right? With a camera in my iPhone in one hand and my very long, like the map, when you unfold the map, it's like 6 feet wide and 2 feet deep. But I had to find my way to Adventureland because you expect entrances and attractions to be in certain locations and they're not, right? So I had to sort of walk back my way through and find one of really only one way sort of into, you know, Adventureland. And it felt, you know, the entrance way felt very similar in terms of the archway in order to get there. But once I stepped in, it felt very, very different to me. I mean, it's very tall and lush. And, it was just about getting close to dusk, and there's tiki torches everywhere. And almost the centerpiece, I felt maybe when I walked in, was their Tarzan's treehouse.
Yeah, it's definitely a very lush and dense area. But again, that's kind of more to the area of Hong Kong. You know, you'll get a little bit more of this tropical feel. But yeah, instead of where Tom Sawyer's Island is or should be, is Tarzan's treehouse, and it is kind of the centerpiece of this land. And it's this amazing treehouse that's it looks very overgrown and almost like just like you would see in the film, and it's like a deluxe version of the versions you have in Disneyland and then also the Swiss Family Treehouse at Disney World.
Yeah, and I was disappointed that I didn't get to go and see it just because, again, time was working against me. The park closed at 8:45 and I had to get back to the airport, and I wanted to make sure I gave myself enough time to get back to the airport not knowing what I was doing. But I loved their Adventureland. I love the feel of it. And I loved, as I was getting ready to take a picture of the tiki torch with the treehouse behind it, again, all lit with real gas tiki torches, the Jungle Cruise boat went by right ahead. And I was like, oh man, like that is very cool. And one of the last attractions I did was their Jungle River Cruise, which was really interesting, man. It had sort of a feel as you're loading of Disneyland's version, but you're right, there are separate entrances if you want English or if you want a Chinese version.
Yeah, and depending which one you pick makes it very interesting. I've done both, and you know, it's funny because the English version, they still do the puns sometimes, but they're not as
they're
much
not
as
fun.
Like,
they're so not funny.
Yeah, exactly. And it almost seems like they know that, so they've toned them down a little bit too.
Yeah.
So they keep it they're like funny haha, but not yeah, it's still an amazing ride. And like you said, it goes past Tarzan's treehouse, which is kind of unique. So even the Jungle Cruise gets exposure to, you know, whereas in like Disney World, it's kind of tucked off to the side and the boats are, you know, you feel a little more enclosed. Some parts of this ride feel much more open and expansive, which is very interesting. But yeah, it's fun. And if you ride the Mandarin version, it's even more fun.
I wish I could have gone back and done it a couple of times. I wish I've seen would have seen it during the day, and then I rode it in the evening. But it was very interesting to hear, like you said, the English version, because it was less punny and tried to be more funny. As you know, some of the jokes we come to expect, whether you're in World or Land, just aren't there. So when you're approaching the hippo, he's just yelling, "Hippo, hippo, look, there's a hippo. It looks like my mother-in-law." You know, so like that was the extent. So it was funny when it maybe wasn't, you know, it was funny for different reasons, but I loved how different it was. And I loved the final scene because as I was walking through Adventureland, I had seen off in the distance this sort of explosion of fire. And I was wondering, oh, and I'm looking on my map going, wondering what attraction that was. And it was actually the finale scene, which has, you know, a giant rock waterfall and fire. And it's very, very unique to that specific attraction.
Yeah, it's definitely a very unique ending. And, you know, I don't want to like give it away, you know, for anyone who's going to ride on it. But yeah, it's awesome. And you can, and like you said, you can hear it when you're in the parks and you can kind of get sneak peeks of it when you walk by certain areas of Adventureland where, you know, you hear the explosion and you see water geysers shooting up in the air. And it makes it more of an adventure ride in the end, mm-hmm. I guess. Which is, you know, again, something you're not expecting on the Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, it was very cool for a lot of different reasons. And like you said, I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to ride again. But really, really, the theme, and I think because it was so lush, it had it didn't feel like the attraction was only 10 years old. It felt like those trees were just there forever. And it, you know, if you look at pictures of early Disney World, and I remember going as a kid, how sparse the trees and the foliage was, and then eventually it started to grow in. This does not feel like that at all.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see, or if you could look it up online, you know, like how much of that foliage is still is the original that was still there when they built the park, and that they just carve into it, because that's how it feels. To your point, it feels like it's been there for, you know, decades.
Yeah, and I'm really sorry that I didn't get to go up into Tarzan's treehouse, because as much as I enjoyed the treehouse experience of just the simplicity of walking through, I'm sorry that I didn't get a chance to look at just the different vistas from the top of the treehouse overlooking the park itself.
Yeah, I've actually myself have not gone over there a lot of times because I am on more limited time like you were. And like Tom Sawyer's Island, you do have to take a raft to get over there. So, you know, you have to kind of plan accordingly if you want to go spend an hour over there or not. And, you know, I wanted to explore other parts of the park, but, from Adventureland and even walking over into like Grizzly Gulch and other areas, you do get a good 360-degree views of that treehouse as you walk around.
Yeah. And you really do have to go through Adventureland in order to get to the park expansion, right, which is Toy Story Land, Mystic Point, and Grizzly Gulch. It's on the opposite side of the train, and you sort of, you can almost really tell because you have to walk under a trestle, and there's a sign announcing those three areas. And the first place that you encounter, if you follow that way, is Grizzly Gulch. And unfortunately, the signature attraction there, the Geyser Gulch, what is, no, it's not Geyser Gulch. It's called the Big Grizzly Mountain Runaway Mine Train. Was closed.
Yeah, and that I feel bad that you didn't get to ride that because that's actually a really cool attraction. It's a great combination of, I would say, Everest and Big Thunder Mountain is probably the best way to describe it. Where you, it's an extremely smooth roller coaster. It does go backwards for a little bit, like Everest does. You feel like you're in an old, you know, Western logging mill, basically, when you board and then you're going into the mines, and it's so well themed, and there's these animatronic bears and they're like helping you out during the ride. And at the one point, you know, almost like Everest, where the train goes up and stops and the track looks broke, on this one, the bears are holding up like some falling braces for the mine. And then the explosion happens with some TNT and you go backwards. And it's a lot of fun.
Hmm. Yeah, I was really impressed as I was walking through the land itself as to how well themed it was. It doesn't feel anything like Walt Disney World or Disneyland's Frontierland. I don't know how, and I'll just only have pictures to sort of illustrate, but there are a number of freestanding buildings, and there's a jail, and there's a dry goods store, and a saloon. Unfortunately, I had to just sort of walk through it because everything was closed, because the main attraction was closed. But I really liked how well themed their Frontierland or their version of Frontierland called Grizzly Gulch was.
Yeah, it's very well themed, and I don't know if you got this feeling too, but the attraction Big Grizzly Mountain Runaway Mine Cars, which is a mouthful, but it's so expansive, that attraction, that it does kind of dominate the land, but it also feels like when you look at it, you almost feel like you're looking at like pictures of Utah. Did you kind of get that vibe where it's like you're almost looking out because of the way they have it themed and kind of the icon of the ride is kind of off in the distance a little bit? It has a very expansive feel, which makes you kind of have that, you know, like, you know, Western expansion, you know, the Wide West feeling when you are there, even though it is a smaller area of the park.
Yeah. So what I had noticed was not necessarily a geographical sense, but if you look at Big Thunder Mountain in World or even in Land, the first thing you notice is how tall, right, the attractions are. The first thing I noticed about this was how deep it was. You see lots of intersections of tracks that go in and around the mountain. And the, there's all the, like, way in the back and the top of the mountain is sort of a covering. It's sort of like a mining instrument is there. And it seems so far away, and not in a forced perspective like Beast Castle in Fantasyland, but it is far away because the attraction itself is so deep in terms of how wide it is.
Yeah, and yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. It's that's exactly how it feels. It feels expansive, and I think it's very well done.
Yeah, and I was really sorry that I didn't get to see it. But what they did have there so that the land didn't seem empty, was there was a ton of characters. There were Chip and Dale there, again, in sort of their version of frontiersy, outdoorsy, you know, 1800s Wild West gear.
Yeah, I saw Chip and Dale. Those are the only ones I saw last time I was there. But my friend, like I said, she said that if you ever want to see characters, that's a great spot to go.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. It's really too bad that the attraction was down. But I will tell you, man, I was really making a beeline to Mystic Point because when you say Hong Kong Disneyland, chances are the people who are describing it to you won't take a pause or a breath before they say you need to go and see Mystic Manor.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to see what you say about it because when I was there last time, it was 3 days before it opened. So I did not get it. I have not gotten a chance to ride it. I've seen it. And the building itself looks beautiful. It's amazing. But yeah, I have not gotten a chance to ride it.
So I had heard a lot about Mystic Manor, but really I did no research ahead of time before I went there. I wanted to be completely, I wanted to just grab the map and go and experience it firsthand before I saw it. But they don't have a haunted mansion there. They don't even have their, you know, wherever our haunted mansion would live. Mystic Manor is sort of maybe their version, but it's very, very different. First of all, the building itself, the entire land itself is beautiful and is centered around the story of this person whose last name just happens to be Mystic. The architecture on the outside of the building, I don't know if there were scaffolding up when you saw it or... Yeah.
It was pretty much almost done. That's why I was really disappointed when I didn't get to ride it. So yeah, no, it's beautiful. It's very ornate. Almost, it almost looks like Russian a little bit with like some of the
it's
dome.
Sort of like a Queen Anne, you know. So if you're familiar with Victorian era architecture, it's very sort of Queen, very delicate on the outside.
Yeah, I mean, it was just beautiful in the colors and nothing like you've seen in any of the other parks.
Yeah, and look, I could do an entire show about the attraction. I certainly don't want to spoil it, but what I loved about this is it's very, it's not about ghosts at all, right? And it maybe is a cultural thing because of how the supernatural is viewed in the Chinese culture, but it's a very light, whimsical. If you've been to the Adventurers Club in Walt Disney World, that's the immediate sense that you get from this attraction because it really is all about these antiques and antiquities and them sort of coming to life and the story of Lord Mystic and his little, very adorable monkey assistant who takes you through. But while there are references to the Haunted Mansion that and some certain things you'll see that are familiar, like there's a changing portrait of Medusa and there's a conservatory and things like that, it's a combination of animatronics, not just in figures, but the artifacts themselves come to life. And that's sort of the story, is that one of these artifacts is opened and it brings these other artifacts to life. And the special effects are amazing. I had a smile on my face and was laughing out loud. And I was even paying attention to the music in the background, which I found out later on I believe it's from Danny Elfman. So the show starts as you approach the building and it carries all the way through, and there's like a music room and an Egyptian room and this amazing Chinese salon where, again, I don't want to spoil it, but you get the sense that you're in almost like a tornado, right? And everything around the room is moving on the walls, and the ride system is one that you're almost in a vehicle that reminds you of like a four-seater Toy Story car or like a Winnie the Pooh car, but there's no track. There's no track at all on the ground. But it's in English, and it's a dual language, so you're able to easily follow along. I was really concerned about that, but it is far and away one of the most beautiful and brilliant attractions Imagineering has made anywhere.
Wow. Well, now I know what I'm going to do during my September trip. I'm going to book a day to go to Hong Kong Disneyland just to go ride this then.
Yeah.
No, it sounds amazing. It sounds like the, when you were describing the ride system, kind of like the Winnie the Pooh ride where during the bounce with Tigger part, it does not stay on track. It kind of free floats.
Yeah.
And that I think that's a newer technology that they've developed, right? The Imagineering, where it doesn't stay on the track, kind of follows magnets in the floor. And it sounds amazing. So yeah, I'm excited to go see
it. In the load area, when you look down, there's just no track at all. You know, even like Ellen's Energy Adventure has that very thin guide wire. Here, you don't see anything.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah. That's the best thing you can say. It's awesome what Imagineering's doing, and I hope something like that can make its way down into the States.
And the thing that I loved and I immediately noticed was the connection between this attraction and other things that we are seeing in other parks domestically. So if you are familiar with the Society of Explorers and Adventurers that you'll find at Tokyo Disney Sea, you're now starting to see total unintentional pun, you are starting to see in places like Walt Disney World and Disneyland, a la Skipper Canteen, there is this real sort of society that they're trying to bring to life that is pervasive through all the parks. So the Society of Explorers and Adventurers is referenced in here. It's referenced in places like Skipper Canteen. So I love how they are able to connect it all. And look, even when you go to the restaurant across the way, the restaurant is the Explorers Club restaurant.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to try to find it and send you the picture. But when I was, not my last trip, but the trip before when I went, when they were first announcing Mystic Manor, it actually said the society invites you to check out the new manor. It was like this whole pamphlet that was previewing what Mystic Manor would be, and it was all about that society, basically promoting it as a new part of their of their culture. It was very. I got to find it so I can remember exactly what it says. It's stored away in some of my many boxes from moving, but I'll find that and I'll send you the picture. But that was pretty interesting. So even back when they were, you know, first announcing the ride, how they tied that in, and you just reminded me of that.
Yeah, and even the exterior, the grounds and the area are an attraction itself. There's a Mystic Point Freight Depot where they have all these huge artifacts that you can take pictures, like a giant Poseidon head. And that's where that Garden of Wonders is too. This sort of a very simple, no queue walkthrough garden with some of those, archaeological antiquities and lots of different types of illusions and stuff as well. So the attraction, quote unquote, bleeds out into the land itself, which I really, really like a lot.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to check all of that land out because, like I said, it was all still closed off when I was there. But I've seen photos online. And I've seen some of my friends' photos on Facebook when she's gone, and it looks amazing.
So I went from there somewhat reluctantly because I wanted to just ride Mystic Manor over and over again. I went from there to Toy Story Land, one, because I wanted to see it, and two, because I wanted to get a sense of what was coming, at least in some part, to Walt Disney World in terms of the attractions and the theming of the land. And they really have three main attractions. They have a Toy Soldier parachute drop, which reminds me of some sort of an old-time Coney Island parachute drop. The Slinky Dog Spin, which is a sort of whimsical take on sort of that carnival attraction where there's music playing in the background and just sort of spins around on a track and goes forward and back. And the thing that I really needed to go see was the RC Racer, which is sort of based on, you know, like the old Mattel Hot Wheels orange track. And if you sort of took the giant circle and cut the top off of it, you would sort of make your car go up and down until it would just use sort of, you know, centripetal force to do it. And normally, like if you go to a carnival or a fair, there's like the giant pirate ship that sort of swings up and down. It's that same type of thing, but instead it's on a track. I don't normally ride it, but I had to do it. I had to give it a shot. I will tell you something, man. Again, no weight. I was able to sit in the front car, and I had a physical sensation that I have never felt anywhere before. I was just pure, like, joy and laughter. And when I got to the very top, I felt in a very good way that my innards were just going to, like, explode out my chest. It was such a unique but fun feeling. It's a short attraction. I mean, maybe it's 30 seconds long, but it was a lot of much more fun than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's probably the best description you could have given it is kind of like those pirate boats. But yeah, it is a lot of fun. It's just, you know, it is more of a kid area, the Toy Story Land. I guess they would consider that their Toontown or a little more kid friendly area because most of the rides are, well, at least Slinky Dog and the parachute, but they're all pretty short. What is it? The Toy Story is you only have to be 32 inches or taller. So again, it's pretty short. But the RC Racer, that ride, for as short as it is, it felt longer. It didn't feel short. It felt like you were on there a good amount of time, and it was a fun experience. The Slinky Dog is fun too. I rode them all just to say I did. You know, the whole area does have a very carnival kind of feel to it, and I'm curious how they'll handle it when they move it to Disney World. And it's also very tight, right? This area of the park is literally attraction right on top of attraction.
Yeah, and it I see what you mean in terms of it being much more attractive to kids. And I even love the fact that on either end of the entrance, they sort of have the Woody on one side, and I don't remember who was on the other, sort of like barkers, sort of calling you in and talking to guests as they came in, which I think is, especially for a place like Hollywood Studios, is going to be a nice addition, because I don't think that there was a place in there that really spoke to kids the same way, especially young kids, right? Sunset Boulevard, Tower Terror, Rock and Roller can't really do it. Maybe if they're not into the shows, things like that, you know, what were the areas other than sort of the Muppet area where, which would be attractive to kids, with the Honey, I Shrunk the Audience or Honey, I Shrunk the Kids play area. This is one that is very much an attractor to kids, but I was very pleasantly surprised at just how much I liked RC Racers.
Yeah, it's a great area. And, you know, it kind of looks like it's like Andy built an area in his backyard. That's what I would describe it as. You know, it's like he took a bunch of his toys outside and left them out there. And that's kind of how they themed it. Even the entrance, you know, I think if I remember, there's like some box tops and like, you know, ripped up pieces of cardboard to kind of, you know, frame it out to make like maybe he made a little fort area and some other things. It was very cool. And it's definitely like we said, very kid friendly because it's very colorful. The Slinky Dog ride is very, very cute with the giant Slinky Dog. He's huge. And it draws you in. But yeah, that RC ride, if they bring that down, that would be awesome.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember the concept. I know that they're having the Slinky Dog attraction, and they're going to have some sort of, aren't they going to have an attraction based on Little Green Men and the Claw? I don't know if the RC Racer is coming to Disney's Hollywood Studios. Maybe not. Maybe it's not. But it's deceptive in just how much fun it is. Because again, I did think it was that, you know, your school fair or carnival sure. type ride. So it was a nice surprise.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun.
So making my way back over to the other side of the park, I was really curious to visit their Tomorrowland. In their Tomorrowland, they have an Autopia, the Buzz Lightyear Astro Blasters, the Orbitron, which is their version of, I was going to call it Star Jets, their version of the Astro Orbiter, Space Mountain, Stitch Encounter, and the UFO Zone, which is sort of an outdoor interactive play area. The first thing I had to go and see, man, was Space Mountain to compare and contrast. I loved the queue area, the theming in the queue area, and it very much felt like look, it's the classic Disney coaster, right? It's you know, we're all familiar with what it is, but I felt that it was darker in there, and I don't know how to say it. You see a lot more in terms of like glowing planets. Like there are physical props in there in terms of some of the planets that you're going by.
Yeah, they used less projections, I feel, and like you said, more real props. So there are like spinning planets right at the top of one of the crests of the hills, and you know, and obviously it's the most updated version of Space Mountain where it does have the music and those kinds of things. So it's a very multi-sensory experience. And I think they did a very good job with it. I kind of hope that if they ever were to update Space Mountain at Disney World, they would follow this one, because it is like, it's like they plused the version they did at Disneyland in California when they opened it here.
And I think this one is very, very smooth too.
Yes, it is probably the smoothest roller coaster I've ever been on.
Yeah,
it was extremely smooth. Even the updated version at Disneyland, sometimes when you hit the top of the crest of a hill, it has a little bit of a hop in it, a little bit of a jerk. You don't get any right. of that on this Space Mountain.
And maybe it's due in part not just to the fact that it's newer, but the ride vehicles themselves are different. You sit side by side, but instead of like Disneyland's, I think we're side by side with two in a car. There's six in a car here.
Yeah, it's a much tighter. I don't know how they did it, but they did a much better job. And like you said, even the queue is everything seems plussed to the version at Disneyland. So if you've seen Disneyland's version, just imagine it done even better with more glowing objects, and even like the area of the load area has, you know, it's just so much brighter as far as like. I don't even know how to describe it. You know what I mean? It's over the top. It's very cool.
Yeah, and I wish I had time to see their Buzz Lightyear to see how it compared with the world and land version. Same thing with Autopia. Yep. I didn't get a chance to see other. How is their Buzz maybe different or similar to the other ones?
So their Buzz is pretty cool. The queue area is nice, because when you first walk in, there's kind of a. You walk in and you go around like one turn, and then you get the reveal of Buzz Lightyear, just like you would at Disney World. But he's not like back off on a stage. He's literally right there, and the queue kind of wraps around him. So you get almost like 180 degrees of walking right by him. You can almost reach out and touch him, and it's like he's right there talking to you. It's very well done animatronic. And then, of course, the actual ride itself has the removable blasters, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. So you can actually kind of reach over and shoot behind you if you missed one and those kinds of things. So the ride itself, very similar. Some of the scenes are a little different, but not anything too crazy. So very, very similar. But I do like that removable blaster. It makes it fun.
Yeah, and I was disappointed that I didn't get to see the Stitch Encounter show. I had just missed the last of the English versions, and just because of time, I didn't have time to go and see the Chinese version. And it's not Stitch's Great Escape, right? It's not the same type of a theater on the round experience. This is a little bit more. Is it more like a Turtle Talk with Crush?
Yeah, there's no chili burps in your nose, so that's always a plus. Yes, a Turtle Talk with Crush is probably the best way to describe it, except done with Stitch. You know, the kids get to go and ask him questions, and you know, he interacts with the audience. And at the end, you know, Captain Gantu tries to capture him, and it's a little scene, and it's fun. It's just a lot of fun, and it's Yeah, it's like Turtle Talk with Crush. That's the best way to say it. I mean, there's not too much more to say about it outside of that. But, you know, if you like Stitch, you'd really enjoy the attraction. So,
yeah, I wanted to ride their Orbitron just because... And Astro Orbiter is not my favorite attraction, but here it's different because instead of rocket ships, they have round sort of UFOs. It's very much a UFO-themed area, right? Even the dining area in that UFO zone, it's sort of a very 50s-style circular UFO. So same type of experience, but also not on top of something like Rocket Tower Plaza, like Disneyland's. It's just a little bit lifted up off the ground.
Yeah, it's not too high off, and I didn't ride it either because it's basically the same idea. But it's very nice to look at, though. But yeah, if you ever get to see pictures, it's pretty cool. A lot of the UFOs all over that area.
And the one thing I didn't get to ride that I was disappointed was Main Street USA. We sort of glossed over it. You know, they have an Art of Animation exhibit in there. They have an Animation Academy. But I did not get a chance to ride the railroad. I didn't realize that the railroad had closed at 6 o'clock. I was hoping to ride it later on in the evening, and I had just missed it. They do have, I believe, a Fantasyland station and just a Main Street station, right? Those are the only two?
Yeah, I believe it's those only two stops, and you know, it's more just about the train ride there. They don't have any real special scenes or anything like that on it. Not like at Disneyland where they have that entire, you know, scene before you get back to Main Street. This is just very much a ride on a steam train.
So let's get to the really important stuff. You know, who are we kidding? The attractions are nice, but we were all curious about the food, and it's prevalent. There is a lot of food everywhere. Like all the attractions, not only are there a number of sit-down and quick-service restaurants, but there are a number of very, very, very unique carts. And I say that because my first encounter with a cart was when I was walking through to Adventureland. I was going over to take a picture to see what was there. And the first item that I saw available for sale was the Korean squid, which was, it looked like a piece of cod or grouper that was going through like a grilling press. Like it sort of came out like almost like you put a piece of toast in that machine and it comes out toasted. That's what this machine looked like. And because it was I just got there and I had a 14-hour flight coming up, I did not, I'm usually an adventurous eater, but I did not try the Korean squid.
Yeah, well, you definitely weren't going to get me to try that. So I am not as adventurous as you. So for me, food when I first went was a worry. But like I said earlier in the show, you don't have to worry about the food. There are plenty of Western options there. But you and I were talking offline. One of the really cool things about the food at this park is outside of the major restaurants, they have displays of what the food looks like. So it's not just the menu, which they do have in English and in Chinese, but they also have actual meals in bowls, you know, under a piece of glass so that you can see what the food looks like.
And that's really, really helpful because I went and I ate at a restaurant, and I love this name. How did I not think of this before? It was a restaurant called Festival of Foods instead of Festival of Fools, like Hunchback of Notre Dame. And fortunately, they had not just a menu out front, so you don't have to waste a lot of time online, but they also had those displays. So you really got a sense of what it was that you were eating. Quickly going back to the cart, on the cart itself, like you said, having comfortable foods there as well. In addition to things like the Korean squid, they also had turkey legs. They had jumbo hot dogs. They had corn on the cob. They also had Korean fish cakes in seafood or cheese flavor. Again, I'm daring. I just ran out of time to try it. But every restaurant that I walked by, including places like the Explorers Club, which unfortunately was closed, I was really, really disappointed because they have a wonderful menu that had, and it was broken down by Indonesian spices, Korean treasures, Southeast Asian delights, and flavors of Japan, with about three or four different items on there. So it could be, you know, barbecue short ribs, deep fried chicken, bento boxes, a Vietnamese beef rice noodle soup combo, a mixed seafood with sambal sauce combo. So it's a great place if you want to be adventurous. This is definitely the the place to go. But I went to Festival of Foods where they broke it down. It really is the great flavors of China is what they call it. So they had three different barbecue items, three different noodle items, and three different wok items. And they had barbecue pork and marinated chicken and duck breast. And I went with which one did I go? I had the dumplings and, I can't seem to find it on my photos. But basically it was Chinese dumplings on like a dried, like a roe noodle, and everything came with soup. Everything seems to have a side of soup with it.
Yeah, well, then that's very much a Chinese style. Is they'll have some sort of hot soup with most of their meals, and a lot of times it's at the end, which is interesting too. But yeah, I've ate there myself. The dumplings are fantastic. I forgot what I got, some sort of noodle dish. I tend to play it kind of safe, but I've ate there and the food was amazing. It was very, very good.
Yeah, so I had it was shrimp wontons and dried shrimp roe noodle combo, which had a very distinct seafoody smell. So if you're not a seafood person, that probably would not have been for you. But they also had duck and pork and chicken food there as well. Had a nice bowl of soup on the side. And the one thing I noticed too, and I had seen this in the Philippines as well, fruit juices are prevalent. And they have freshly bottled juices that they offered. And I asked which was her favorite, and she recommended a mango juice, it literally felt like the woman had just taken a mango and squeezed the juices out of it right into the bottle.
Yeah, if you would have asked me what juice do they recommend, I would have told you mango. Mango is is huge in that area. But yeah, fruit juice is, just like we would order, a water or a soda at a restaurant. They usually order some sort of hot tea, kind of comes standard with a meal. And a lot of Chinese will order, some sort of fresh pureed fruit. And that's kind of what it is. And I don't know if your mango had a lot of pulp in it. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But it's extremely fresh and so good. That's really all it is. Is sometimes they'll blend it with some kiwi or some sort of other fruit to give it some more sweetness. But all of their fruit juices are just fantastic.
Yeah, I had seen it in the airport. I had eaten in the airport a number of times because I had long layovers on the front and the back end. And there was a lot of different varieties of juices and the bobo teas. One thing I noticed, too, were the prevalence of frozen treats on a lot of the carts. And there was usually about six or seven different ones. They had like an orange ice bar, a sherbet bar. They had a Mickey bar, a mini bar, a Lotso sherbet bar, and a few others. And they had this really cool, and I ran out of time, unfortunately. They had this chocolate banana dipper, and it almost looks like Yes. They hollowed out a banana, sliced it up, dipped the individual slices in chocolate, and then stuck it back in a banana.
Yeah, those are really good.
Oh,
that's exactly exactly how you described it. And again, a lot of that goes back to most of the time it's really hot in Hong Kong. So you do want something cool, something refreshing. And I love how a lot of them are called frozen lollipops, even if it's like a Mickey bar. So it's just kind of a cool way to describe it. But yeah, a lot of cold treats in the carts and different flavors of popcorn too. Oh, there's so many popcorn flavors there. There's a curry and caramel, and I think there's a cheese flavor if I remember. But just a lot of variety in the food. It's amazing how many different foods there are in just such a small park when you compare it to like, one of our parks where like a Disneyland where it's like, you can find a turkey leg, a churro, and a piece of corn in either, Fantasyland or on Main Street or in Adventureland where it kind of repeats. Here, it seems like every cart is more unique.
Yeah, I'm a big popcorn fan, and one of the things I was really looking forward to was hopefully sampling all of the different flavors that they had, and I started and stopped at curry because my goal was to just taste a little bit and then move on to another one so I could taste them all, and I literally stood in the middle of Tomorrowland and ate the entire thing myself. Don't judge me. It was that good. I may or may not have licked my fingers as well. It was phenomenal. It was really, really good, and it's not – when you think of curry, it's not – hot spice curry. It's sort of like it's a curry spice but not spicy.
Yeah, it's more like a yellow curry flavor where it's that sweeter curry, right? You know, and I did the same thing. I'm not judging. I bought a box and asked for a bag at the Emporium, and may have taken it on the plane with me. So, you know, I had a nice snack. So, no, it is that good. But yeah, the popcorn flavors are amazing.
And they, and like World and Land, they have not just the TIE fighters and some of the other souvenir. I mean, they probably had 4 or 5 different souvenir buckets that you could have chosen, including like a 10th anniversary Mickey balloon type bucket. Again, very, very heavy on characters. Even my popcorn bucket had, you know, Chip and my popcorn. I didn't have a whole bucket, but my popcorn box had, you know, Chip and Dale on it.
Yeah. Characters are definitely prominent in this park. Whereas sometimes I feel like certain areas of parks here in the States tend to shy away from them. They're definitely integrated in every area of this park.
And to your point before about more American-style food, there's one place called the Starliner Diner in Tomorrowland, which is like, the you know, we say, oh, we're going to a Chinese restaurant. That would be like saying, let's go to the American restaurant, because it's hamburgers, chicken breast, fried chicken, fish burger, chicken wings. They have, you know, kids burgers and things like that. So if you're concerned, if you're going and saying, I just need to get me a hamburger, you can certainly get that from a quick service location as well.
Yeah, that's usually my go-to, because I've already been in China for several weeks when I get there. So I'm like, I need a burger. So that's usually where I will go. Again, to your point about characters, I've been in there before and had Pluto serve me my lunch. So that's awesome. You know, they have characters everywhere, and I've seen them in the restaurants behind the counters, like, you know, pretending to cook and serving people food. So it just adds a little more magic to the experience.
And just quickly staying in Tomorrowland, or heading back to Tomorrowland, where I had my oh-so-delicious curry popcorn. I missed Autopia because I was too busy eating the popcorn. I feel your pain about seeing the signs for Mystic Manor coming but not open, because I was excited yet somewhat frustrated to see the scaffolding and the work and the logos for the Stark Expo Iron Man experience, which is coming later on this year.
Ah, see, I didn't even know about that. That sounds very interesting. So, again, if you want to tag along in September.
Yeah, you know, but listen, research trip definitely. I had seen concept art for it when it was announced, and I'm like, oh, I'm never going to get out to Hong Kong. Then when I went this trip, I'm like, well, I have to go because I'm never going to come back out to Hong Kong. But I think now I need to go back just to see what this is, because, again, the attractions there are just done so, so very well.
Yeah. I'm in on this trip. And if we have to do a layover in Tokyo to get there, maybe we could swing that too.
Dude, we're there. Look, Shanghai is right around the corner. Like, yeah, it's a 10-minute cab ride. So.
Exactly.
Just a couple other quick things, and I want to touch on something. You know, going back to characters, if you go to the character page on the Hong Kong Disneyland site, I mean, there's probably 25 different characters that they list in terms of who they are and where you can actually find them. It really is a big deal. In addition, they also celebrate a lot of special events. So, you know, especially here at World, we've got, you know, Halloween, we've got Christmas, we've got Easter. All that. So here, they celebrate everything from their version of a haunted Halloween. I think what I'm experiencing, or what I was experiencing right now, was something called the Springtime Eggstravaganza. And on your map, they have this really cool character Easter egg hunt. And I know you can do something like this in World Showcase right now, but there's got to be, I'm doing a quick look, probably 40 or 50 different character eggs that you can find throughout the park. It's free and it's on your map. And they celebrate, Christmas out there as well. So it'd be really neat to see what it would be like to visit there during one of the holidays. But I will tell you, I prefaced this by saying how empty the park was, and how every single attraction was 5 minutes. I mean, which basically meant you're walking onto it. The busiest part of the park, by far, not even close, was the shops on Main Street USA.
Yes. Main Street is, like you said, you could walk right on everything. You walk into the shops on Main Street and you feel like wishes just got over it sometimes. They are crowded. The merchandise, Disney merchandise, does extremely well over there. And you and I were talking earlier that, you know, the Zoom Zooms, you know, they're everywhere over there, the ones that you can't find here in the States yet. So they release so many new things over there first. And a lot of times, like, my kids love it because I'll come back with all these things that, you know, we won't see in our parks for maybe 6 months later. And it's because the Disney merchandise over there sells so well.
Yeah, I mean, I went to the archive shop at Mystic Point, and I loved how well-themed, and I wanted to start, like, grabbing a million things up, but it was early on in my trip, and I had noticed a lot of, like, the trading post in Adventureland and some of the other little, you know, treasure places in Fantasyland, but their version of the Emporium, it was like Black Friday with 50% off coupons in there. It was insane. It wasn't, I mean, people with, and by people, I mean me too, baskets and baskets of merchandise and long lines and, you know, very crowded. And I'm like, what are they giving away today? But I guess it's just like that all the time. And to your point, we were talking about characters and the plush. I mean, they love, there's a ton of plush and tons of Tsum Tsums, which, of course, I had to bring back because especially they had like this 10th anniversary pack, which I don't know what it actually cost me in American dollars. You know, we talk about the pricing of the admission being less, but the pricing of the merchandise is pretty much on par with what you'd find in the States.
Yeah. Ticket prices cheaper, food cheaper, merchandise the same. And a lot of times, a lot of the merchandise, as we've discovered with the parks in the States, it's the same thing. It just has a different logo on it. You know, you'll find the same Mickey plush, except it says Hong Kong Disney on it instead of Disneyland. But yeah, the merchandise, just because the exchange rate does not affect most of the items over there.
Yeah, a lot of Duffy, a lot of love for Duffy, a lot of love for Shelley May as well. Mm-hmm. Lots of different outfits. I mean, I was able to bring back, because I was really looking for things that were unique to Hong Kong Disneyland, not just in terms of the label that was on it. So, you know, I found some stuff that just had some logo. Obviously, there's a lot of pins. They did have some unique Tsum Tsums, and they had this sort of 10th anniversary pack that I just had to bring home, and my kids fortunately lost their minds in a good way when I did.
Well, you know, they have some of the similar shops, though. So some of the stores on Main Street are very familiar. There's the Crystal Arts store. They have the Emporium. There's the jewelry store, you know, which has the purses and the jewelry. One called Center Street Boutique, which has, you know, houseware and posters and those kinds of things, watches. So a lot of the shops on Main Street are very similar to what you'd find in the other parks. Again, it's just some of them have more unique items of merchandise. Like, you'll find a lot of Mickey or Disney characters wearing traditional Chinese apparel and those kinds of things that you probably would not see in the States. Also, a lot of tie-in with Hong Kong, the city itself. So you'll see pins with Mickey Mouse walking down the streets of Hong Kong, whereas maybe you might see something like that at like a New York Disney store, but you wouldn't see it in the parks.
Yeah, and that's some of the things I was looking for. And I brought back a couple of small, they had like these small sort of magnetic clip-on plushes of Mickey and Minnie in traditional Chinese garb, which really sort of, you know, to me sort of screamed, you know, the fact that the park was in China.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just they definitely tie back into their culture with a lot of the characters, whereas you would think maybe people in Hong Kong may want something more Western. They have a good mix.
So we obviously are going long because we're trying to cover an entire park and so much to it. You know, I think that there are definitely some things, if you go, that are must-dos and some things that I think are must-dos that I missed, because there's also a lot of entertainment and shows. I really wanted to see their version of Festival of the Lion King, which I understand is beautiful, and their version of Mickey and the Wondrous Book, which I believe is probably like Disneyland's Mickey and the Magical Map.
Yeah, I have not gotten to see either of those because, again, a lot of it because of timing. But last time I was there, they did not have the last one you mentioned. They didn't have that one. They actually had the Golden Mickeys from the cruise line. They had that. They had that show when I was there last time, and I know that got updated with the new one. So that, and I've heard that they do that every once in a while. Is they'll roll in some of the shows from the cruise line into that park as you know, just a regular show attraction.
Yeah, and I wish, like I said, I wish you know I had time just to see some more of those things because, like you said, I did the park. I mean, I saw quote unquote everything in the park in probably 5-6 hours rushing through, but I think the park is definitely meant to be done in 2 days, right? We didn't even talk about things like the Paint the Night parade. They have a fireworks show. They've got, you know, other stuff going on throughout the day in terms of entertainment offerings too.
Yeah, and let's not forget that they also have two unique Disney hotels over there also. So, you know, you can make it a weekend trip or you can make it a week trip if you want it. But they have the Hong Kong Disneyland Hotel, which is very much like the Grand Floridian. And then they have the Disney Hollywood Hotel, which is I would consider it a moderate resort, you know, if you're comparing it to Disney World. So they have those two hotels, which I've never even seen, nor do I know where they're at in the area. Right. You know, because like you walk that concourse when you walk in is so grand and you just kind of instantly veer over to the parks. But I know they're within walking distance to the park. So that's going to be my mission next time I'm there is to check out the hotels because I've seen the pictures from my friend on her Facebook account. And they look beautiful. So I need to go find them. They must be on the backside of that giant mountain that we thought was fake.
Right. And there's I know when I was looking on the way out in terms of some, you know, there's like Walt Disney World and Disneyland, there's dining experiences there too. And I love that there's a place known as Walt Cafe. They have an Enchanted Garden, which I wonder how closely that might tie into things like the Enchanted Garden on the Disney Cruise Line, right? So we're talking about the Golden Mickeys having coming over. So,
Chef Mickey's.
Yeah. So it would be neat to check out the hotels too, because like you said, you don't see them as, you know, when you just come in to the park. It's not like California Adventure where you can see the hotels right there, or even some places like you know, Epcot, and the hotels are right outside. So I think that, you know, in sort of wrapping it all up, I think that there's a lot of reasons to go, right? I think there's a lot of things that are not just familiar, but certainly very unique. I think places like Mystic Point and Mystic Manor and their Adventureland and the Grizzly Gulch, right? Taking your word for it in terms of that attraction, and just the Asian influence and the cultural aspects of the park are reasons to go. But is it one of those things that you? I don't think that I would take a trip to Hong Kong just to go to Hong Kong Disneyland. But if you are in Asia, like I think it's a place that you need to go to. If that makes any sense.
No, I would 100% agree. I would not be, and a lot of it is just because of the financial investment, right? I mean, it's not cheap to get over to Hong Kong or to Asia in general. You know, flights over are in the thousands, I mean, even for economy. So if you're taking your family, it does get expensive. So if I was there for business or if I was going to spend a week in Hong Kong and experience the city, I would definitely carve out some time to go there. And with Hong Kong being a major hub to most of Asia, chances are, if you were even planning a trip to Shanghai, you could go through Hong Kong first and make a stopover. So definitely if you're in the area or if you have plans to go to China or if you're in China and, again, you know, China being we're acting like China's the size of, you know, Florida, but you know, it's a huge country, obviously. So depending where you're at in China. But if you're in that Southeast Asia area and you have an opportunity to go, it's definitely worth the trip to go.
Yeah, and I think you hit on all the right points, right? The park itself has that unique feel and Asian flair to it. I think Hong Kong, I wish I would have been able to spend more time in Hong Kong because I want to see the history and the culture and obviously the food. And if you do go, you can't, and I would allot 2 days for Hong Kong Disneyland so you can really see it and appreciate it because it is not... it's easy to get to, right? I mean, it's, you know, just hop on the plane. It's not close. You know, coming from Florida, I realized as I was traveling to the Philippines and I landed in Hong Kong that if I would have gone any further, I would have started on my way back, you know, because it really is on the other side of the planet. you know, even if you get a direct flight to Hong Kong from L.A., you're looking at a 14-plus hour flight, and it's easy, and the airline is wonderful, but it is definitely an investment of time and money to get there. So I think the play, especially with Shanghai opening up this summer, is to hit Shanghai and Hong Kong if you can, and as long as you're extending, you might. I mean, look, Tokyo, like I said, is right down the street, so...
Right, no, and if you
not really,
if you,
but.
And if you want to swing by Alani on the way home, you know, it's just it's on the way. It's a little hop, right?
You need a stopover somewhere. You know?
Right, exactly.
I stopped in Vancouver on my way. I took a weird way back. I went from Hong Kong to New York, not realizing I had a quick stopover in Vancouver. But again, getting nothing out of it other than recommending to friends, Cathay Pacific, thanks to you, Frank, is definitely the airline to take. It made for a wonderful experience. I would suggest if you are thinking about it but had any concerns, whether it be for safety, security, language barrier, food, ease of getting to it, I will tell you, as a solo traveler, it was very, very simple to do. I felt very, very comfortable, felt very safe from the second I got on the plane to when I was in the airport, in the cab, and when I got certainly onto Disney property. The cast members, you know, again, there are cultural differences, but they are clearly Disney cast members, and they are very, very helpful. The woman who was serving me at Festival of Foods, I felt like it was my aunt or my grandmother talking to me and explaining the different dishes and why I need to try the mango juice because it was that good. So I got that same type of, you know, Disney magic and Disney feel and the same type of customer service when I went there.
Yeah, if you're going to go to a park overseas, I mean, obviously, we haven't been to Shanghai yet. I've never been to Tokyo, but from a transportation and from a language barrier place, Hong Kong is a place to go because, again, with it formerly being under Britain rule, there are so many English-speaking people there, and English is, you know, almost where Spanish has become so dominant here in the States. English is there, and almost everything has an English translation. It's very easy to get around. Chances are, if the first guy didn't speak English, the next guy you talk to does. And to your point, the cast members there are amazing. And when you are in that park, and as isolated as you feel within those mountains, it has that Disney magic, and you get that little touch of Disney, even you know, 7,000 miles away from Disney World. So.
Yeah, great experience, and thank you so much for suggesting it to me and giving me the comfort to the comfort to be able to go and the encouragement to do so, because I would have certainly regretted not doing it. And who knows, maybe in this week's trivia contest, I'll even have a little something to give away from Hong Kong Disneyland, which is really the reason why I went, was just to get the cool merchandise too. Frank Hart, thank you so much, man. We have a lot of wonderful adventures together, and you've been on the show in the past and talking about places like Skipper Cave. It seems to always be around food and some of the other great things we've done together. So I really appreciate it. And we will have to talk about, you know, maybe a little a research trip, a buddy comedy research trip, you and I going out to hit some of the other Asian parks this year as well.
Well, that sounds like a plan, and I'll put it on my calendar.
Thanks, brother.
Okay, Lou. Xi She and Sai Chen.
I got nothing. She She? She She? Am I saying it wrong? Have I been saying it wrong the whole time?
She She, She She. People say it so many ways. I don't even know the right way to say it.
Time for our Walt Disney World Trivia Question of the Week, where I invite you to test your knowledge of Walt Disney World history or see how well you pay attention to the details, not just in what you see, but sometimes in what you hear. And if you think you know the answer, you can enter via email for your chance to win a Disney prize package. Before we get to this week's question, let's go back, review last week's, and select our winner. So as you remember on the last show, we were talking about Disney and New Orleans and the influence of real New Orleans on not just Walt Disney World, but Disneyland and Walt himself. And the question that I asked you, surprisingly, was not about the oh-so-delicious food that I miss so very much in New Orleans, but what I asked you was to tell me what famous real location in New Orleans is the Port Orleans French Quarter gift shop named after? thanks and congratulations to so many of you that entered and got this one correct. Bonus points, not that they were being given out in real life, but bonus points given to so many of you that added your own stories about being in Jackson Square or the history behind the park in the French Quarter where Louisiana became a U.S. territory with the Louisiana Purchase. I took all the correct entries, randomly selected one, and last week you were playing not just for the 102 ways to save money for Nat Walters World Book, all seven of my virtual audio walking tours of the Magic Kingdom, both of which you can find in the shop at www.radio.com, but a WDW Radio Magic Band cover and special Mardi Gras beads brought straight from New Orleans. It sounds like a line from a song from Princess and the Frog, but last week's winner, randomly selected, is Natalie Levine. So, Natalie, thank you and congratulations. Email me your address. I'll get your prize package out to you right away. If you played last week and didn't win, that's okay. Forget it. Put the past behind you because here's your next chance to enter in this week's Walt Disney World Trivia Challenge. So obviously, you know the question has to be about Hong Kong Disneyland. And even if you haven't been there before, that's okay because it's just a fun little bit of trivia I want to share with you because the Hong Kong Disneyland Railroad has three locomotives in its fleet. The Walter E. Disney, obviously a tribute to Walt. The Roy O. Disney, co-founder and Walt's brother. And there's your question. Tell me, what is the name of the third locomotive on the Hong Kong Disneyland Railroad line? You have until Sunday, March 27th at 11:59 p.m. to email your answer to contest@wdwradio.com. And this week, you're playing for the 102 ways to save money for Nat Walt Disney World book and all seven of the audio tours, or what's behind door number two, you can win a WDW Radio Magic Band cover, a Hong Kong Disneyland map, and a Hong Kong Disneyland mystery prize from the bevy and bag of souvenirs that I brought home. It could be a pin, a plush, a pen, a Tsum Tsum, who knows? So good luck and have fun. Shay Shay. That's going to do it for this week's show. Thank you so much for taking the time and tune in this and every week and for sharing my Hong Disneyland experience with you. If you've been to Hong Kong Disneyland or if you're thinking about going, let me know. Leave your comments over at www.radio.com/440 or tweet me at Lou Mangiello or go to facebook.com/Lou Mangiello or call the voicemail at 407-900-9391. Tell me about your experiences at Hong Kong Disneyland. Want to quickly continue the thanks to all the new members of the WDW Radio Nation and family, including Brian Becker, Katie Hayes, and Jessica Pitcairn. I sincerely appreciate all the love and the support. And if you want to help the show and get exclusive rewards every month, including scavenger hunts, access to our private Facebook group, personalized Magic Band covers, logo gear, backpack, t-shirts, care packages every month from Walt Disney World, our monthly live video group calls, and more, visit wdwradio.com/support. Also, be sure and visit wdwradio.com. Check out our daily blog. We've got some great March Madness Disney stuff going on there. Subscribe to our free email newsletter and be part of the community. Also, if you have a question you want me to answer on the air, you can email me, lou@wdwradio.com, or just call the voicemail. Be part of the show and on the air at 407-900-9391. Don't forget to please follow me over on Facebook at facebook.com/loumangiello and join me every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern as I broadcast live either from the home studio or out in the parks. It's a great way for us to chat real time and sometimes bring you a little bit of Disney right from the parks. Again, that's facebook.com/Lou Mangiello. Follow me there and turn on your notifications. I'm also at Lou Mangiello on all the social. And of course, as much as I love connecting with you online, there's nothing that beats a handshake and a hug. So check out our events page or my events at facebook.com/Lou Mangiello, including our monthly meetups in Walt Disney World and events on the road. The next meet of the month is going to be Saturday, April 16th. That is during the Star Wars Half Marathon weekend. Stay tuned to the events page and Twitter and Facebook for exact location and times. And look for other events on the road. I'll also be in Iowa the first weekend in April. We're planning an event or events in Chicago over the weekend of July 15th, which is also the weekend of the Rock and Roll Half Marathon. Saturday, June 4th, I'll be speaking at the Ed Camp Magic Conference in Orlando. And in November, it's our big e-ticket adventure on the Disney Magic from New York to and in Puerto Rico. Again, visit the events page at wdwradio.com for more information. I'll be doing other events as I travel throughout the country and obviously now throughout the world, speaking at conferences and to businesses. And if I can help you by maybe coming to speak to your school or at your conference or to your business, visit loumangiello.com. And maybe if I can help you turn your passion into your profession with some personal mentoring or group coaching, you can also check out loumangiello.com for more information. Thank you, as always, to MouseFan Travel. They are my official and recommended travel provider. And when you go to Hong Kong Disneyland, because hopefully now you're going to want to and have to go, Becky and her team of agents can help you plan your trip there. Tokyo, Shanghai, Disneyland, Aulani, New Orleans, Buffalo, Schenectady, Walla Walla, wherever it is that you're going, they can help you. Check them out over at mousefantravel.com and visit Celebrations Press to get some Disney magic delivered right to your door or digital device. And as always, my friends, and you are my friends, whether we have met yet or not, all I ask is that if you like the show, please help spread the word. Let others know about it. Tweet out that you're listening. Share links and comment over on Facebook. And please review the show over on iTunes. It's incredibly helpful. And thanks to you, we have more than 1,100 five-star reviews. Would love for you to keep them coming. I want to thank some recent reviewers like Derek and Marissa Marin, Sue and Jordan, OrcaPod 95085 says, love the show. Brenda Lee 1981 says, it is the best podcast, all caps, ever. She says, a former employee introduced me to the show over a year ago. It's been one of the best things to enter my life. Thank you, Lou, for the tips, advice, fun banter, warm friendliness, and encouragement. Your podcast makes me feel like I'm there with you and part of the extended family. Brenda, you most certainly are. Also, thanks to Fitzer 1201 and Maureen's 17, who's gone over and listened to every show over the past year. She has to say, it's the best. It's positive, fun, entertaining, and it truly brightens up your morning commute. Thank you, Maureen. Again, you can visit wdwradio.com/iTunes for instructions on how to rate and review the show, or just search for WDW Radio in iTunes. And finally, and most importantly, my sincerest thanks to you. I would not be able to do what I do and live this amazing life without you and the love and the support and the encouragement that you give. And I want you to do the same thing. Whatever it is that you're dreaming of in your personal life or your business life, I want you to start taking steps to go do it. And maybe it's time to burn the boats, right? And what do I mean by that? The story goes that is that explorer Hernando Cortez, when he landed in Mexico, he told his army to burn the boats that they came in so that they had no way of retreating, right? Failure was not an option, because sometimes you need to take that big leap of faith and go all in. So think how differently you might behave, the risks you might take in work and in life, if failure was simply not an option. Remember that in order to succeed, you have to fully commit. And if you want lasting motivation, burn your boats. Amazing things happen when there is no plan B. Go burn your boats, have faith, have an amazing, amazing week, and thank you again so, so very much. So until next time, Shay Shay, see ya.
Oh, Nick from Milwaukee. Just finished listening to your Tangerine Cafe review. Let's keep the call in. No matter what, the time of my vacation, every time I go down there, it's Tangerine Cafe. Combo platter, shawarma platter. Sit outside, watch everybody walk by. I'll even ruin a dinner for it. It's fantastic every single time. So, appreciate the review. Keep up with the great shows.
Hello, Lou. This is Mike Graham calling from Minnesota. Just getting done with our 15-day trip to Walt Disney World. We stayed 7 days at Bay Lake Towers, 4 days at Beach Club, and 4 days in the RV. At Fort Wilderness on the way back now, just got so busy, couldn't call you from the park. So I just wanted to check in and say hi, and hi to everybody, and thanks again for all you do. Thanks, Lou.
Hello, Lou Mangiello. It's Shirley Nagy from West Seneca, New York, calling with our countdown for a sail out of New York City to the Caribbean. It's going to be so exciting. We have 226 days until that adventure, the e-ticket adventure, as you are calling it, is going to be with us. I can't wait. And I know my friend from work who's coming with me, Karen, is going to be so excited to see everybody and meet everybody and to be on a Disney cruise for the first time. She sailed before, but a Disney cruise is a new one for her. It was on her bucket list.
Hi, Lou. This is Jennifer Lambert from Southgate, Michigan. My husband and I are sitting in the Diving Bell in Jack Lindsay's Banger Bar, having a couple of drinks. We've gotten some souvenir glasses, and I'm enjoying a actual Diving Bell. So thanks for the review a few weeks back. We really are enjoying it, and have a magical day.
You got a friend in me. Yeah.
Be swift as a coursing river, with all the force of a great typhoon, with all the strength of a raging fire, mysterious as the dark side of.